Okay, I'd first like to start off by acknowledging my co-author, Qazi Abdul Kalam Azad, who really is the first author of this presentation, and I'm presenting it on his behalf. In a somewhat of a departure from the previous presentation by Dr. Pappas, what I'm really going to talk about is heterogeneity in megacities. I mean, a lot of the concerns that we've had is about the public health implications of what happens in megacities. And what we're really going to be talking about in this presentation is that not all groups in megacities are equally at risk. And some groups, particularly rural urban migrants, are particularly vulnerable. And this presentation is an attempt to try to understand why is it that this group is particularly vulnerable compared to other groups in... So this presentation is an attempt to explore why some groups, specifically rural urban migrants, or the children of rural urban migrants, are particularly vulnerable compared to rural natives or urban natives. So let me just go on. I'm going to talk a little bit about the background, present the data and methodology, then talk about the results and findings, and then end with concluding remarks. Some of this has already been covered by Dr. Pappas, but I think it bears repeating that there is an amazingly rapid pace of urbanization in developing countries, and Bangladesh is no stranger to that. In 1974, Bangladesh was one of the least urbanized large countries in the world. It was about 9% urbanized. And now in 2007, it's 27% urbanized, and the pace of urbanization is so rapid that it is expected that actually much before 2050, I'm just being conservative here, that 50% of this country, which is currently 150 million people, is going to be urbanized. Now, this is a massive change in the in terms of the perception of the country as well. I mean, this is a country about the size of Wisconsin, for those of who are familiar with sort of the US context. It has 150 million people right now. Dhaka is a mega city. It has 15 million people. And it is growing at 7% a year. In 10 years, it is expected to double. And at that point, we'll actually surpass Karachi. So massive urbanization, very, very rapid. Why is this happening? It's a complex set of reasons. A large part of it is that's where the money is. That's where the manufacturing industries are. The garment industry is the major driver of economic growth in Bangladesh. Almost all of the garment industry is situated in and around the city. Other manufacturing industries have come up. This is coupled by the fact that the returns to agriculture is going down rapidly. Because of population growth, the average size of farms has gone down rapidly. And so it's no longer economically viable for people to stay in rural areas. So not surprisingly, this phenomena of rural urban migration, which has been going on for some time now, is going to continue to grow. Part of the interesting issue here is that this rural urban migration is somewhat asymmetric. It's not that all the cities in Bangladesh are growing. It is the capital, which is where all roads lead to the capital, essentially. That Dhaka is the major city, which is growing incredibly rapidly. The other cities are growing, but nowhere near as fast. And if it were more symmetric, it wouldn't be so much of a problem. Now, this is the sort of the backdrop, the context of this whole study. And we know that there's rapid urbanization. We don't understand what are the consequences of this rapid urbanization. And this is what this study is trying to explore. It's interesting to note that most urban health indices are actually better than rural health indices for a variety of reasons. And the arguments that are often given are that there are better services, more doctors, more hospitals, more clinics, even though they are woefully inadequate by any international standards. Generally, in developing countries, we find that infant mortality rates, child mortality rates tend to be lower in urban areas than in rural areas. However, studies in Bangladesh have in the last 5 years, have shown that there seems to be a bit of a disjunction in terms of rural-urban migrants, that actually mortality for rural-urban migrant children is higher than either for rural children, children who've never migrated, or for children who've grown up in cities and have never moved. So this is a matter of great concern, and this brings up this whole issue of heterogeneity within the urban environment, that even though in general urban children and urban adults do better, there seems to be a group that doesn't seem to be doing as well, which may be rural urban migrants. Now, some arguments that have been put forth to try to explain this have to do with what we call acclimatization costs, that parents who move from rural areas are essentially not aware of what services are available. They also don't have a kinship network or a social network, which is usually a huge modality by which people get information about where to go, what to do, how to navigate the urban landscape. And there's also this issue that, you know, who are the people who are moving? That they're largely poor people who are moving from rural areas to urban areas. So this might, in fact, a large part of it may be just the fact that this is an impact of poverty. Now, as I said, the studies have focused on mortality. There have been no studies done on morbidity. And we know that acute respiratory tract infections are a major cause of childhood mortality and morbidity. And about a fifth of all childhood deaths are attributed to ARI. So one of the motivations behind this study was to say that, wait a minute, if there's such high mortality among rural urban migrants, part of that may be because they may be more susceptible to ARIs, and let's try to explore that. What we've done is we've utilized data from a very large nationally representative survey called the Bangladesh Demographic and Health Surveys. The DHS surveys, as you know, are done in about 150 countries around the world in a three-year cycle. And what we were able to utilize was that for the first time they had data on ARI prevalence, that they actually had a module where mothers were asked about whether their children in the last 2 weeks prior to the survey had certain symptoms, and you can actually come up with a prevalence rate for ARI. And so we were using this very large data set, nationally representative, to try to get at this sense, and they also had data on migration, which was the important part of this. So we were able to marry data on migration and data on ARI. Basically, the basic model is to use logistic regression to predict the log odds of a child having ARI as a function of various predictors, most importantly, the migrant status of the mother. Just so that we are all on the same page, the case definition of ARI was that a child was considered to having ARI if in the 2 weeks prior to the survey, the mother reported that the child had a cough and any one of the three subsequent symptoms, you know, short, rapid breathing, difficulty in breathing, chest indrawing. Now, before I go on, I should say that there's a lot of debate about whether this is an appropriate definition, whether this, you know, is basically overly sensitive. And, you know, we played around with this definition quite a bit. I'm just presenting the most conservative, expansive definition where you would be classified as having ARI if you had a cough and any one of those three symptoms. We've also experimented with tightening up the definition, and that's a different presentation. But actually, the results don't change that much. I just wanted people to know that, because I know that whenever we presented this data, there has been concern that this, you know, this may be an overly liberal definition of ARI. In terms of the migrant status of the mother, basically the child was classified as belonging to a mother who's either an urban native, that means the mother had not migrated in a fairly long period of time, and I'll come to that issue, a rural native or a rural urban migrant. Just to give you some very basic data, roughly about 8% of the sample was urban natives. The vast majority, 80%, were rural natives, and about 13% were rural urban migrants. And if you look at just the percentage of ARI within the group, what you find out is that there are two groups which are at risk. Urban natives are the reference group. They're the best off. Both rural natives, that is, children of mothers who are rural natives and children of rural urban migrants, both seem to have about a 50% increase in risk of ARI. Now, this is a bit of a complicated slide. Let me sort of walk you through it, because it's a set of sequential regressions where we first start off with the basic migrant status indicator. And as was pointed out in the earlier slide, rural natives and rural urban migrants are very much at risk. Then once we control for the age of the child, which is a very basic risk factor. It doesn't really change very much. In the third model, however, when we start controlling for the economic status of the family, it turns out that the high risk of rural native children, that means these are children whose parents have not migrated ever from a rural area, is largely because they tend to be poorer. They tend to come from poorer households than their peers who are urban natives. However, that is not the case for migrant children. Even after controlling for poverty, you still have a very large residual risk. And this is the basic story, that even after controlling for some very basic socioeconomic risk factors like the poverty of the household and nutritional indices of the mother and the child, you still have this very large residual risk that remains unexplained for children of mothers who have migrated from a rural area to an urban area. And basically, I've said this. So what does this mean? I mean, basically, it gets back to the point that, you know, from a policy point of view, we need to think about that there is a heterogeneity among among cities, and particularly in megacities, because that's where most of the migration is taking place. That it's not all children are not equally at risk, and that particularly children of migrant mothers. Now, obviously, the next step forward would be to get more extensive data on duration of migration. We've done some of this exploratory work. And it turns out that it's not a simple story. It's not that, you know, we first thought that, okay, anyone who had migrated in the last 5 years, you'd consider a migrant. Anyone who had migrated more than 5 years ago should have assimilated and should have been able to figure out. Turns out that that's not what our data show. I'm not presenting that data here, but just to sort of point out to people that the assimilation or the acclimatization seems to take place over a much longer period of over 10 years. We basically have data for about 10 years of migration status. And even there, we still see a difference, that people who migrated as early as 10 years ago still seem to be at high risk. So clearly, this process of acclimatization seems to be taking much longer than what we might have hoped. We clearly need much more data about environmental hazards, especially air quality. We're looking at ARI, so that's an obvious issue. All of these kids are basically, the migrant children are living in slums. I think Greg's presentation in a very graphic way and sort of pictorially showed you how crowded these communities are. This brings up to the next point, that we need much better data on crowding, on air quality. And those are at some level difficult to collect, but at least you know what to do. The latter points about access to childcare and healthcare are really sort of network-related issues, and we know that how poor mothers basically negotiate childcare is they have to go out and work. They have to have someone to leave the kids with, and this is a big issue if you're a migrant mother because you don't know anyone. If you were in a rural setting, you would have an extended family, you would have someone to look after the children, and of course the chances are that the mother wouldn't be going out to work to begin with. So this issue of social networks, kin networks, is I think a very important issue for us to tap into. These are not easy data to collect, but this is an area that I think needs much more closer examination. And of course, you know, getting better information on the nutrition status of the child and the mother would probably help partition some of this risk. I mean, the bottom line in all of this is we are still not clear why children of migrant mothers are at such high risk. We have some information that seems to explain that some of it is due to poverty, but there seems to be a larger set of factors which need to be explored. All right, from a policy point of view, what does this mean? First, we have at least identified a certain source of heterogeneity. We know that in terms of policy, we can't treat all urban children the same, that we need to pay much more attention to those children whose mothers are migrants. We know that nutritional indices are a big risk factor for ARI, and obviously any policy that supports nutritional supplements would probably almost intuitively make a difference. We know that, I mean, this is an issue that hasn't really been looked at, but there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that early use of antibiotics basically prevents ARI from progressing towards pneumonia, which is the major source of mortality. And it's interesting that in developing countries like Bangladesh and Pakistan, everything is over the counter. So you actually have access. You don't really need a doctor's prescription. But people just don't have enough information to know that, you know, if a child is not doing well, maybe the best thing they can do is start them on antibiotics. This is a controversial issue because this brings up this whole issue of increasing resistance as opposed to trying to prevent mortality. This is a hot area of research right now. There is, in fact, some work that suggests that early use of antibiotics, by even just using an algorithm, allows and treating the children at home causes a significant decline in mortality. So these are some of the things that need to be further explored. Thank you very much, and I look forward to any questions that you might have.
Thanks, Dr. Rahman. We're going to go out of order a little bit. Let's see here.